The triad is a lively scene. As springtime dances in, homeowners are ready to sell, and their built equity is a win. Great homes will be for sale, with a new deal behind each door. The Sharp Mortgage Team is excited to help in the spring of 2024. With wisdom and commitment, we'll help you chart your move. A quick conversation and pre-approval will get you in the groove. With pre-approval secured, you'll be steps ahead, you'll see, ready to embrace the home buying journey with confidence and glee. From cozy cottages to sprawling estates, you'll find the perfect fit, and your real estate agent's skill set help and determined grit. With a wealth of knowledge and a heart for your buying success, we'll navigate the housing market, ensuring nothing less. Don't let the media fool you. You deserve a wonderful new nest. With the Sharp Mortgage Team, you're poised for nothing less than the best. Embrace the warmth of springtime, flowers, and skies of blue. Partner with the Sharp Mortgage Team. We're always here for you.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, it is our April real estate podcast. We are in the thick of spring, although this week hasn't felt like it, at least as of our recording. Next week, it's going to maybe start to feel like summer, but we are recording with Blake Ginther from the Ginther Group Real Estate in Winston-Salem. We're recording this on the opening round of the Masters, a tradition unlike any other. And maybe what is now our tradition, Blake, if we record on the first day of the Masters or any time during the Masters, is we just try to see how many golf puns we can sneak into the recording, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's tee it up.
Boom. There's one.
And get this podcast into the fairway.
Oh, wow. That's a two tee.
All right.
Two tee up intro.
Nice two part. two average puns. And let's see how much better we can do as we move along. Okay. Blake, I want to start here just because it's the major news nationally and even around our state. We talked about this when the lawsuit with the National Association of Realtors is what we're talking about here. And a settlement was just reached and expected to be paid out in the nine figures, the mid nine figures. We did a podcast a few months ago about what all this means, but let's bring it back up to the surface because of what's happened recently, which that a settlement has been reached in this lawsuit. So Blake, maybe just start from the beginning here. Let's back up a few paces and tell us what the lawsuit was actually all about.
Yeah. So I think the lawsuit came about because, believe it or not, in I think 38 of the states there's still not buyer agency. So it wasn't properly documented. Commissions and co-oping commissions, and ultimately this sense that sellers were paying for the commission for their competition. Right, it would be like going to a trial, right, and paying for your competitor's lawyer, right? That's essentially how it was viewed. Mm-hmm. Now, the reality is some of this is honestly is fiscal semantics, because I do think that it could be argued that the buyer is paying the commission, right? We've talked about this in the past. Ultimately, the buyer is the one bringing the money, right? Seller sets it. But again, I'm not sure that's correct either, right? And so basically, and by the way, I mean, DOJ is trying to fight this settlement. So it's still very much up in the air. I think the two things I want consumers to know about where they are right now is absolutely they can, they should, if they want to try to capture some money from any prior sales per the suit, they can call a real estate attorney and ask their opportunity, what that looks like. I'll tell you, I have had a couple consumers tell me, and it sounds like it's going to end up being a couple hundred dollars. The attorneys are all driving ships. I won't even say yachts. The ones who took this on are driving like straight up. They bought like used cruise ships with how much money they made on the suit. And the consumer is ultimately going to end up making a couple hundred dollars potentially. Mm-hmm. So yeah, not surprising, but nonetheless, there is I think it sounds like some hundreds of dollars for a consumer who sold to potentially look into. And then the other thing is today I just last week had a consumer say, a client say, so are you, can we renegotiate your commissions? And I'm like, guys, my commissions, like all commissions for all of eternity have been negotiable, right? That is, you know, what I'm willing to work for is X, right? And then what you're willing to offer the co-oping agent, that can be Y. Candidly, we should look at the competition and see what our competition is offering. And that's going to get harder, right? That's the number one thing. Right now, it's not hard. I can go in MLS and I can say, hey, you have 7 active houses within a couple miles of you that are in the similar price point that all are offering between 2.5% and 3%, right, to their co-oping agent. Come July, in theory, we don't even know definitively if it's actually going to be July or later or whatnot, but we should just assume for now that it's going to be come July. I won't be able to do that. I'll have to call agents and say, hey, what is your co-op and commission? It will be exponentially harder for us to know what is being offered. Mm-hmm. And I think their hope is that that makes it easier for consumers to negotiate co-op and commission. We'll see.
This was not about whether the commissions were fair or not. This was all about transparency and communication. Again, this is a national lawsuit. Right. And as you've said in our previous show, North Carolina has been very transparent and communicates well what these commissions are and the fact that they've always been negotiable.
Correct. Yeah, we're one of the few states. I mean, I'm not intending to sound like I'm knocking Winston or North Carolina. I'm just a little surprised that we are so far ahead of the rest of the country from a legality perspective on our paperwork. But we are, and it in very clearly in the listing agreement, there's a percentage point for the total, and then there's a percentage point. There's a box that says for co-oping, right? And I've had consumers say, wait a second, is it 6 plus 3? Am I paying that? No, right? And then I've had to say that now for years. It's a total of blank, right? And that's, I think they're mad that they feel like it's always 6. Well, I mean, it depends on the firm. I mean, there are firms out there for sure that are offering less and then more. So it has always been negotiable. I just think in Winston, maybe more firms have been at a similar number that has made people think that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know. And I think it was important to bring that up and get people to understand just what this was about and what it's not about, really. And a lot of it comes down to, look, it really boils down to the big question of, do you want to pay a commission to work with a realtor or do you not? I think we have done a pretty good job of illustrating over the last several episodes we've been doing this of the value of working with a real estate agent and why that commission pays off.
I want to say one thing that's been kind of, and I haven't put this out there, and I don't want to go to the social world, but I will say, I think it's really short-sighted because I think that people forget that for my 20 years of doing this now, the vast majority of my time, was spent taking listings that didn't sell. I mean, people forget that, and we're not going to be that far from that happening again, right? And I mean, we are seeing listings expire today because they were either underpriced or overpriced or frankly underdelivered on their condition. So, or some kind of combination of the above, but the consumers forget that most agents worked for free if they failed and spent thousands and thousands of dollars and hours upon hours of their time. And I think that has been overall forgotten because of the last 4 years. I get it for people. I get it. They just, we're going to get back there. And the irony is this is going to take hold. And then we'll get back to a market where I think the consumers, much like attorneys, then agents are going to start charging regardless of whether we win or not, whether we succeed with the sale of your home or not.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know if that's better for the consumer. Right. And I'm not to go political, but I have heard a lot of politicians comment on this, and it just couldn't be further from accurate. Right. To say that this is guaranteed to save consumers money is honestly blatantly a lie. That is some straight politician talk.
Yeah. And that's really the last thing I wanted to ask you about, because the thing that I keep seeing, and, you know, President Biden has addressed it, and it's been all over the national news. But the question that seems to be out there is, if this settlement, you know, it's being challenged right now, but if this settlement goes through and gets paid out, is this going to do anything to affect home values, sale prices?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't believe so. I don't think it directly impacts home values. I think the market will continue to impact home values. I think our economy is going to impact home values. I think that if you take away, it could be like, for example, if we take away co-op and commission and the buyer's agent has to get a worked-in concession, right? And I heard this said the other day. I'm like, I mean, that is pretty a good way to accurately state it, is if now the $10,000 sale becomes $300,000 with $9,000 in concessions, right, for the buyer's agent to be able to have their commission wrapped into the closing of the loan, then the consumer is ultimately not, no. I mean, but it could appear that home values went down in that scenario.
Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying some of that, Blake. And look, if people want have more questions about if they're going to be buying or selling a home, I mean, buying a home, maybe not as much of an impact for you if you're the buyer, but if you're selling a home and you want to talk about what this could potentially mean for you, just reach out to Blake and his team. Blake, they've got answers for your situation. They've got options. And we've got all that information in the show notes. You know by now, if you listen to our podcast, how to get hold of Blake and the Ginther Group. So, but it's a big story, man. And look, people can go back in the archives. We dig a lot deeper on this topic in our previous episode. So maybe we'll link to that show as well in our show notes. But I think it was important to, take a drop on that one. And you like that one? Yeah,
sure.
Take a drop and play it again.
I don't know. I feel like I swung and missed on that one a little bit, but
you topped it.
It's time to get serious about your financial future. It's never too early, but it could be too late to get started. And that's oftentimes the hardest part, getting started. How much do I save? Where do I invest? Do I save for college or retirement? How much for each? And who do I talk to about it all? Okay, we'll keep things simple for now and help you answer the last one. We recommend you begin with a local financial advisor. And that's Jennifer Johnson of Three Magnolias Financial Advisors. She'll sit down with you for a complimentary introductory consultation and go over all of your questions. Get started on the path to achieving your financial goals. Visit 3magnoliasfinancialadvisors.com or call 336-701-1600. Get comfortable with your financial future. 3 Magnolias Financial Advisors, retirement, financial planning, and investments. Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through 3 Magnolias Financial Advisors. 3 Magnolias Financial Advisors and Cetera Advisor Networks are not affiliated. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity.
Moving on. Blake, you provided a market update on your Facebook page not too long ago. In our last episode, we talked about just clearing the air and giving proper perception on what the market is and what it isn't right now. It is spring, and that is typically the busiest time when it comes to real estate. But we've got interest rates, we've got low inventory, we've got a time of year when there's more transactions. And so there's a lot of things that are contributing to saying, okay, what is our market status? You told me before we hit the record button that you are still seeing a big gap in what is true and what is not. So what are the facts right now? Because this is not Blake's opinion that we're saying is fact. This is Blake with data telling you what is true.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, right? So some of the data says exactly what we've been saying for like the last 4 years, right? 2 months inventory, and I've been saying less is coming on, less is going off for like really since the rates went up like a year and a half ago, coming up on 2 years, right? So I'm saying a lot of the similar things. I think the challenge is there's a lot of assumptions being made that is getting people into trouble. Agents, right? Some agents are assuming multiple offers on houses that are really like well done, well positioned, I think it, you know, getting a lot of showings. So people are, I think, making assumptions. Buyers are making assumptions that they can sleep on a house. That's happening a lot right now. They're like, well, the house has been on the market for 5 days. It's still out there. I mean, I'm just going to sleep on it. We'll get in touch with you tomorrow. And then it's gone the next day, and they are furious. That's happening a lot right now. I'm getting calls very commonly after we market under contract. Oh, my gosh, my clients wanted that so badly. Can we put in a backup offer? Please keep me posted. And then a couple days later, they're still kicking themselves. Is it still available? It's like, y'all, if you felt that way, what did you need that extra nights of sleep for? What is this? What is the insecurity? And that's what it feels like, is there's a lot of consumer insecurity right now that the real estate market, and it's like they just don't believe that the data is what the data is, and that whether it's because of the election or the economy, but regardless, we are in the same place, and it's just consumer insecurity combined with a lot of assumptions, combined with, frankly, poor communication skills. We are falling into a civilization, for a variety of reasons, where we communicate less.
That is the truth in so many different ways.
And I'm like,
you stuck that one to within 2 feet.
Thanks. Now I got to nail the birdie putt. All right. So the truth is, it is like, honestly, as this is coming from somebody who, by the way, doesn't crave to be speaking to people on his phone. I'm not a natural, like, oh gosh, I spend my day on the phone. That doesn't mean that I love it. And I see the value in it now more than ever, specifically with real estate, but honestly, pretty much in every aspect of life. There is a lot of, we have fallen into some poor communication habits, and then assumptions combined plus poor communication habits equals disappointment.
Yep. So let me see if I can summarize what you said about the misconceptions in terms of what side of the transaction you're on. People assume that because inventory is so is still low, that there's going to be a lot of multiple offer situations, bidding wars, et cetera. It's going to be chaotic. And so, you know, sellers might assume that, and it's not actually true, because there aren't as many buyers out there for reasons that we've touched on before, whether it's interest rates or whether it's just the you know, the situation we're in right now locally. But the other reason the thing that I'll add to that is it fair to say that the misconception is, it's true there aren't as many buyers out there, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the buyers that are there aren't super aggressive. You know, the ones that are there are serious and aggressive, and you still have to be, you still can't sit on the fence if you're wanting to get in and find something.
Well, and I think the last 2 months, buyers have been able to take a couple of days, right? The home hitting the market and it selling that day is very rare. It is very rare. Now, homes hitting markets, hitting the market and selling in the first weekend isn't that rare. The average, though, is almost 3 weeks. So it's understandable that consumers think they have time. The challenge is, you've heard me say this before, consumers there's too many consumers thinking they're like weird and they're the only ones out there liking this house, right? You're not that weird, probably, right? There's probably other people who like the house. And I think that what this is, I said this in my last market update, that what's happening is in mid-April, here come the out-of-staters, and they will not hem and haw. They will not have the time to hem and haw. And they're going to crush the local consumers, because the local consumers are definitely hemming and hawing.
That's a great point. Yeah, I hadn't even considered that you have to factor in the out-of-state buyers, because we know North Carolina is one of the top states in the country in terms of population increase.
Yes.
Especially in urban areas. Like, I mean, we're not Charlotte, we're not Raleigh, but we're still considered an urban area.
And those cities have actually, I think, forced us to grow faster because
yeah, they don't want to be in Charlotte. They don't want to be in Raleigh. Winston, hey, Winston's a perfect. It's funny. I was just having this conversation with someone the other day. Winston is the perfect blend, right? And Greensboro too, like perfect blend of it's got just enough, but it's not too much.
I think that's what most people when they come here, when they travel here, that's exactly what they say. It's got enough of the city vibe, but has a Winston in particular has a small town feel that it's frankly going for. Greensboro, I've always said, is wanting to be a little more commercial, right? Mm-hmm. A little more of a city vibe, and nothing wrong with that. It's just the cities have different vibes.
So what are you ultimately trying to recommend? And it's very hard to paint with a broad brush on these questions, but what are you ultimately trying to recommend from the seller's perspective? We talked about the buyers, you know, don't hem and haw. If you like the house, why do you need to sleep on it? That kind of thing. But what are you trying to tell the sellers in these situations?
I think the same goes from a seller's perspective is I think you should ask your agent, what should I expect? And don't expect the agent to say, you know, within a shadow of like, it's going to be blank. But I think the agents need to be able to say, listen, I think we should expect X amount of showings in the first, you know, hopefully 3 to 7 days. I think that you can hope to get a strong offer in the first, if we get those showings, hope to get a strong offer in that time period. But don't anticipate / expect or assume that we're going to get in a bidding war, right? And don't think that way. Don't price that way. Don't expect that. Could it happen? Yeah, it could happen. Don't expect it.
I can't think of a good golf pun for that.
I know. The grass. The grass isn't always greener. Adam is really where, you know, but that's not really a golf pun.
That's a life pun. That's a bumper sticker pun. You know, whatever you want to call it. All right. Well, Blake, let's close with this because we're trying to make this somewhat golf themed, and part of what we do in this podcast is we talk about the virtues of the Triad itself and being a great place for people to live. Tell us about the golfing scene and what you love about the golfing scene here in our fair community.
I mean, look, North Carolina is truly one of the best climates, right, for golf. You can golf year round here. I'm a bit of a wuss, so I typically don't golf when it's below 50 degrees. And that means that, but I can golf in every month. There are over 50 degree days in every month, right? Even January and February, usually. We have three phenomenal public courses that I think we have more than three, but ultimately we have three kind of popular, great layout courses in Oak Valley, Salem Glen, and Meadowlands. We have four really phenomenal country club courses in Bermuda Run, which has two courses, Forsyth Country Club, Old Town, and what's the one out there that all the people who own the restaurants have?
You said Old Town, Forsyth,
Bermuda Run, and
Maple Chase.
Thank you very much. Which I think is probably the best deal. Mm-hmm. They're pouring a ton of money and doing a great job with that course. So those, you know, combined with a bunch of other courses. And the other thing is we're an hour from Pinehurst, right? We're an hour and 15 minutes from what is considered by most the mecca of golf.
Mm-hmm.
So that has like literally hundreds of courses that are all amazing.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, if you're a golfer, and a lot of people do retire here to play golf.
Yeah, and I'll give a shout out to Tanglewood as well. Tanglewood, two great courses out there. Great junior golf program. My son's involved with PGA Junior League over there. Shout out Daniel Bird, the tremendous coach over there. So yeah,
okay.
Tanglewood too.
I'm going to say this right now on this podcast. I forgot that course because it's mean and it hates me. That course hates me.
You don't play well out there.
I don't think I've ever scored well. I'll go out there for tournaments like where it's a best ball scenario.
Yeah. But
it's one of those courses that like championship in particular that I have never played well on.
Yeah. I've never seen this in person. I've never played golf with you, but I've heard from someone that has played golf with you that you're quite the player.
Okay. What's hilarious is my swing is honestly top 10 ugliest swing you've ever seen.
But it's you're like single digit handicap, right?
I float between essentially like a 7 and a 9.
Wow. Okay.
But I am a truly hideous golfer. Hideous. And my son started playing and he started swinging like me, and I've gotten him lessons so that he doesn't swing like me.
Okay. All right. Hey man, it's not about how you do it. It's about where the ball goes after you make contact. So
right. Look, there's no pictures on the scorecard, Adam.
Look, I mean, Jim Furyk put together a hell of a career. So
yes, he did.
It's okay. All right, my friend, let's close out the way we normally do. How can the folks get a hold of you for real estate questions, options, advice, or golf advice?
Well, I will send them to who to talk to for golf, and they should call me for anything real estate related. Even if it's, by the way, needing a name and number for an attorney or HVAC or plumber, call me at 336-283-8689, 283-8689, or theginthergroup.com.
All right, my friend, fairways and greens this weekend. Okay.
Nothing but it.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode on the Triad Podcast Network. Our mission is simple: provide information, advice, and stories about the people and places that make the North Carolina Triad such a great place to be. You can find us by searching Triad Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much wherever you like to listen. If you like what you heard and want to support the show and those that contribute, we would truly appreciate a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. It helps spread the word along, as do your shares on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Triad Podcast. To get in touch with us, simply email info@triadpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.